Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and to share in the celebration of the last days and working for you as the ARS. I have known him since he started his professional career at Purdue University way back in 1968. I joined the faculty at the same time, actually you were the ARS, he was with the university. And our offices were across each other. We have done some collaborative work, but ever since we have always been in touch with each other over the years, whether it was by Christmas cards or by professional matters. I have deeply appreciated this relationship. I step back in time. I think we have been talking a lot about complex systems, modelings, and I go back to, I would say, our professional grandfather's time, which I would cite around the 1950s and 40s and all that sort of thing. Work was done by some people that have made a tremendous impression, particularly in the area of saturated groundwater flow under conditions that were idealized, homogeneous, isotropic, and all that sort of thing. But sometimes it's good to go back and see what did these old fellows, what did they do? And they often came from a physics background. And the objective, therefore, is to relate work from one particular individual who is unknown, but who did a tremendous job in putting together the flow regimes inside the groundwater flow under very low land conditions in the Netherlands. He was a student of Hooghout, which was a famous Dutch drainage engineer. The analysis is quite complex. There's a lot of mathematics involved, so I will try to skip over all of that one, but give you some idea what he was doing. I consider it to be holistic because he included all kind of processes, infiltration, evaporation, precipitation, deep drainage, and seepage. And so it is a systems approach. And in that way, it connects perhaps with the systems approach with the unsaturated zone that we mostly have been talking about. Here are the regimes that we really were covering. You can see six models here, six situations. The upper one is what we call the three upper ones are the drainage situation, where L is the flow that comes from the bottom or goes to the bottom, and is the evaporation or the infiltration, and then P is the drain or the infiltration supply line. And so I will be talking about the first one primarily, but the other one, all of that can be really collected, captured by the mathematical formulas that Van Deventer developed. So I've already mentioned the issues of why that came about, and that was mostly one needed to quantify the radial resistances of the flow, because in those days, shallow flow, it was mostly the Forchheimer-Dupuy assumptions which were used, but the radial resistances were unknown. And so Van Deventer addressed that particular issue. Now the equations that all come into play are, of course, Laplace's equation, the Cauchy-Riemann equations, the Schwarz-Christoffel transformation, and the hodograph. These are terms which you go back in the drainage theory, you find those. The Schwarz-Christoffel transformation is kind of interesting because what that did was you could project a particular flow field onto the upper half of a complex plane in which the vertices were located on the real axis. While the hodograph is the collection of velocity components starting from the origin to where you have to be in the flow field. This is the flow region number one, and here you see a typical profile with the groundwater table. And when you go back to the work by Kirkham, and you can relate to that situation quite well. And this is the case where then L minus N is greater than zero. In other words, you have really a net drainage to the point P, which is mathematically, of course, a point of minus infinity potential. And that will be the mirror image which relates to the infiltration aspect, in which L minus N is smaller than zero. Now, the idea here is expressed in the first line here that the solution approach is to transformally the spatial plane of the flow region, which is given by Z is equal to X plus Iy, and as well as the potential plane, omega is equal to pi plus I psi, onto the upper half of the complex plane, and then the issue is, if you have done that, then you have, of course, point line on different positions on the real axis, but then you could use a linear fractional transformation to bring them together so that a point known on one plane could be evaluated on points on the other plane. Here see the transformations, sorry, some symbols didn't come out very well, but here the sequence of transformations that are being used. And only mention that to give you an idea of what they look like. I need to point out that here are the graphical illustrations of these transformations. You can go to the rho plane at the top coming from the omega plane, go all the way down to the upper half of the sigma plane, and the same thing you could do from the autograph, in which W is the differential of omega with respect to Z, and it's really the velocity component in the flow field at any point in the flow field. Then in the final step would be the T plane, which is not a transformation, but is simply a parameter in this case that you can use as the linking the two planes together in the end. This is information that relates to the vertices, what each value would be, each of the vertices be Q, R, S, and T, in the different planes in terms of the value of the plane itself, sigma, eta, psi, and so on. When you start putting together all these equations, you come up with algebraically with a new equation that gives you Z as a function of T. And the same thing could be done with the potential field, in which you can get omega as a function of T. And so these are the expressions that result. Now, when you look at that, there are a couple of parameters which are important to consider. One is gamma, which is the conductivity K plus the precipitation or infiltration divided by what comes out of the bottom L minus N. It, in a way, expresses the water that comes into or goes out of the aquifer. Beta is expresses, in a way, the difference between the potential above the terrain or the infiltration line at the point where water enters or exits the aquifer, and on the other end, the midway point between the two planes. Now, the flow region is symmetric with respect to adjoining regions so that you can utilize this conformal approach in a more convenient manner. I have just explained to you what gamma and beta represent. They are connected in some way. And if you have a fast transmittance, water flows easily out by a high value of K, so then the value of beta increases too. There's a connection over there. Having all done that, you can, there's one more point to consider, and that's the control point, where the water enters or exits the aquifer. And that is determined by what the water level is in the drain or the ditch, wherever that water goes to, as well as the surface area through which drainage or infiltration takes place. So physically, you have combined all the factors that are relevant in these mathematical equations. One important notion is, of course, the groundwater table. And that one is decided by the water level above the drain or the infiltration line versus that at the midway point. And if you go through the analysis and do a lot of algebra, you come up with expressions for C, which is the water level at the midpoint between two infiltration lines or drain lines, and B, which is the water level above the drain or infiltration point itself. So there are a lot of applications that you can use in this way. You can evaluate how much water goes in and out, what the requirements are with respect to spacing, what the requirements are with respect to the pressure that you have in the supply line or in the drainage line, and so that at all times you have a adequacy in the water level that feeds, I would say, the zone which is above it or that takes water out of the unsaturated zone to be depleted in the case of drainage. So Van Deventer's analysis, as I look at that one, is a major development in the systems approach of handling water management problems of drainage and irrigation of flatland areas. And it exceeded, in my notion, by far the work that was done by his colleagues, Childs in England, Gustafsson in Sweden, Kirkham in the United States, Hoogcott in the Netherlands. And in a way, as I said at the outset, it sort of complements the work that Large did in the unsaturated zone with respect to a systems approach that deals really with a saturated zone. And in a way, nobody knows about this work. I came across it while I was studying drainage engineering and bargaining in the Netherlands way back in the 1960s, and it always has stayed with me as a masterpiece that I like to bring to the attention of the scientific community. And that was my object in participating in this audience, knowing that a lot of solar physicists are around here and probably would be interested at some point in some of that old work that was being done in those days. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for a very good presentation, and we have plenty of time for questions, so please take advantage. Matt has been retired, and he came to join us, so we can't leave him get off with no questions. Dennis.
Matt, you can implement this with just knowledge of tile spacing. Do you have just knowledge of tile spacing and what the rainfall rates are?
Yes, you need to know all these parameters. And this is a steady-state situation. It is an idealized situation. But keep in mind, you can change those and see what the new situation will be. For instance, with drainage, in one case, firstly, you lower the infiltration rate. How does the groundwater table adjust? And how much time does it take for that excess flow to drain out of it? And that might be, again, a parameter that says something about the transmittency of that aquifer. So there's a lot.
Steady-state
situation. So they could use a pseudo steady-state approach you could use, I think.
You beat the time. Well, it's fantastic. Well, thank you so much.